Go for it.
On like Flynn. I mean, I said that right. If you live in Sweden, we're glad you're watching.
Excellent.
If you live in Norway, never mind.
Those of you who have been playing with this all day will understand that reference.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so welcome back. Microsoft Virtual Academy. This is day 3, module 7. We're going to be talking about media. We're going to talk about camera capture. We're going to talk about advertising, all kinds of things like that. If you want to follow along, all of our source code is available to you at xaml.codeplex.com. You can download it and follow right along. A couple people in our chat room have made it clear that they are not reading. There are prerequisites for that.
I think there also is one genuine problem in that we uploaded and we renamed the application. And so that there is some artifacts that are left around for Jumpstart or for a Monetize app.
Yeah.
You can just remove that from the solution. You don't need to worry about it. The Jumpstart app is the app that we're actually demoing right now. And so go ahead. Don't worry about that one.
We were going to make individual projects, and we ended up just making this whole app.
Yes.
Yeah. And by the time this is syndicated, by the way, that app may be in the store.
Yes.
Go to the Windows Store, search for... What are we going to call it?
I think it's Jumpstart app.
But what will we call it? Windows 8 Jumpstart, probably.
Windows 8 Jumpstart.
Something like that. Go see if you can find it. Consider it a scavenger hunt. All right. Very good. Let's talk about what we mean by media, photo capture, advertising, protocol activation. Not everything has to do with media. We just kind of jam some stuff in.
Exactly. Yeah. It's media in finger quotes.
But there's quite a few features specific in our app that are worth covering, mm-hmm. and we didn't want to skip them. So we'll start with this photo capture. So I love this. I love this where I can interact with the different sensors of the device. And, until hardware catches up, Darren, we may not have a reliable accelerometer in devices. You know, I mean, you never know. I mean, odds are pretty low that it's a pretty small percentage that are going to have an accelerometer. But a camera... Oh, yeah, high percentage of a camera. It's almost impossible to even buy a laptop that doesn't have a camera or a monitor. I mean, these monitors have a camera right here as well, you know. And so to be able to interact with the camera, now that is something that is very relevant right now. So we're going to talk about camera capture and the APIs as well. All right, so what does it require? Let's take a look. As far as capabilities, this is absolutely one of those things you have to ask for. You do not have access to the webcam until you first ask for it and are approved by the user. And there are two things you want, not just the webcam, but also the microphone. This is a common gotcha by developers. They get the webcam selected, and still it doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because they don't also have microphone. It's just required, do it, right? That's the way it goes. Go in and make these suggestions. Remember to build your application defensively so that if the user gives you permission, you can go to town. And if they block you and say, you can't use my webcam, then you need to be able to handle that and not just blow up. Moreover, I think it's worth saying that the reason you have to ask for the webcam is because I as a user don't want applications interacting with the webcam until I give them permission. That's a security feature as far as I'm concerned. Okay, so as a XAML developer, you have a couple things at your disposal. The first one is the capture element. So we have two ways to capture a picture. The first one is capture element. Capture element basically draws the canvas on your application and shows what the camera sees. That's fun, right? It's almost like the preview of what you're about to take a picture of. That's the capture element. But you may not want to put that into your application. It may not fit just right. What you really want to do is offload this to the camera UI itself. This is something that Windows 8 has built into it. You can just say, go take a picture for me. The UI launches. It handles everything. A lot like the file open dialog in Windows or the create new directory. Those dialogs are all handled for you. They just hand back the result. All right. So we have two things. We have the capture element and we have the camera capture UI. So if I were using the media capture, if I were using the capture element, I must use the media capture with it. Media capture is basically all the plumbing underneath the capture element that takes the logic that's used inside the camera capture UI and gives you access to it directly, and you can pass in the capture element with it. So what can it do? Well, it can do a lot of things. First, you can You can set up all the settings inside Media Capture. So you can say the resulting encoded image needs to be this type. You could also say that what I want is a video, and the video needs to be like this. You can talk about bounds, have how big it is, the resolution, lots of different things you can do. And so you can set up all the settings. You can start the preview, which of course is the reason you're using the capture element in the first place. Then you can capture a photo. That's an asynchronous operation. You can capture it directly to a file in your system, and which is beautiful. The file doesn't have to be there in advance. You just save it to it, and or you can capture it to a stream if you want. You can do the exact same thing with a video. Capture the video to a file or to a stream. Very nice, super easy. You can create your UI so quick and nice, and I'll show you one that we have put together so you can see how it's done. And beautiful. All right, so if you're using the camera capture UI, by contrast, then all you do is set up the settings, you know, whether or not you want a video, whether or not you want a photo, and the boundaries, very similar to before, and you just say go, right? And you let the rest kind of handle itself. It's all asynchronous, and it's all offloaded. Okay, so let's look at doing it inside your application using the capture element. I think that's going to be the most interesting one. So in this case, I have a capture element. It's 150 by 200. It's a nice little box inside my application. It says preview right above it. And in my code behind, I create that media capture. Remember, that's where the bulk of the logic is going to be exposed to you. And here I can initialize that media capture, which basically is starting up the camera. It's at that moment. It's at that moment that the user is prompted to use the camera. And once they approve it, they aren't prompted again, unless they block it, of course. And anyway, so this is when it happens, not when your application is installed, not when your application is first run, but when you first initialize the camera. Then you say cap1, that's our capture element up there, dot source equals media capture, and from that point forward, the capture element is going to show what the camera sees, basically. And the last thing you do is say start preview, and that turns everything on and starts the juices flowing. Is that easy? Now I've got a preview in my application. Four quick lines and an element that's already in your toolbox. Pretty cool. Now let's say you did want to use the camera capture UI. That's where you offload it to the UI that's already built in. Here's the two lines to do it. I mean, it's just like this. You create a new capture UI and you say to it, capture file async. And you pass in whether or not you want a photo, a video, or both. So in this case, it's UI mode dot photo or video. I didn't have to do that. I could restrict it to just one or the other. And then once that's happened, the next thing, it passes back the photo itself. So see where it says var photo equals. And the result is, literally, there's nothing for you to do. You're handing it to the UI to do all the work. Then, just as an option, in the second line, we're moving it to a local folder. You can do anything with it. You don't have to move it if you don't want to. And that's it. You've captured the photo. Now it's there. You're ready to go with it. It's obeyed you as far as the settings that you've passed in. And capture and photo capture complete. It's beautiful.
Perfect.
Absolutely is. So you can both leverage the options of the camera. So this is the dialogue to allow you to interact with camera options. You can both leverage the options to the camera as well as be options for a camera. Another way to activate your app is as camera options. That's definitely an edge case for specific implementation, but it's more rare. But nonetheless, you get the same features, and you can either do that by offloading to the camera UI or implement it yourself, which is a little bit more work. If you're going to use it, then if you're going to use it and you know the camera options are important, then I would make it so I offload it to the camera UI because all of those options are built in. But if you don't care about the options, then using that capture element's a breeze. Okay, so let me pull this up and show you something. All right, so here we are. Not this one. This one. Is this the same one? No. Oh, I must have closed it. Why would I close our set of demos? Ridiculous. Don't laugh, Barry.
Wasn't me.
This is what happens when you dash to the restroom just before we start.
Thank you. I appreciate you announcing that. All right, so. It's ridiculous. Module 7 and 8 are just a wash.
I know. Right?
You tried doing this for 8 hours straight.
Exactly.
All right, no, seriously. Let's look at how we've implemented. In fact, let me just go ahead and run it first because I want to kind of show it And so you can see where we're headed. So remember that we created the badge user control. That's the picture of the user that's currently logged in. See, it's Mr. Microsoft. And so if he clicks, if I click on that, that gives me the option to take a picture and change my badge. Now, we didn't go all the way to say that this is how we're going to implement changing your badge in your Live ID or your Microsoft ID, Microsoft account. This is just changing it locally, but nonetheless, here it is. So I'll change it. I have Scotty here. So you can see Scotty is slowly approaching the camera. Can you see that? He's falling. All right, so anyway, here he is. He sneaks up like so.
Get on with it.
He's a different profile. All right, nonetheless, so this is the capture element, right? The capture element already has set preview. Our start preview async has already been run. That's the reason you can see this guy. He is he's ready to be captured. You click on the capture button. It snaps the picture for me, and whether you can accept it or just keep repeating. So if I accept it, that's when it moves it to a local folder. And when it does, you can see the image up here has changed to that local picture I've done, right? So if I were to do it again, this time I'll like put my hand behind it so you can see there's a dramatic difference, right? Like so. And then up here in the top right corner, you can see the image has been taken. This is great, right? Such a simple little thing. The UI I built myself. I don't care about camera options or anything like that. And the rest is just kind of automatically handled. All right, so how did we do it? How can you put this in your application? It's so few lines of code, you'll be amazed. You'll be amazed, and you'll want to do it yourself in no time. So here's the XAML to build out the UI. So I have two buttons, capture and accept, and I have two containers, right? The first one here is the capture element, and the one on the right is the image itself. So this is the one that we were talking about originally that's tapped into the camera showing what the live preview is. And this is just an image to show what you just took because we have a reference now to that file. And then the capture is the invoker of all that, right? That's the idea. Okay, so let's look at the camera view model so we can see how it's done. Capture is what we care about the most. This is the take command, could have been capture command. And this code right here, and because we're doing a view model, we're using a delegate command to do it. And so right here in the execute is how we do it. So the first thing we'd say is, I have to pay attention to what I'm doing. All right.
How are you doing, Dan?
So for this one, this is me. I create the destination first. And this is important. And the reason I'm creating the destination with a GUID, and you can see right here I'm creating a new GUID, is because of the way that the image caches, the bitmap caches in XAML or in C# here. And the way that it works is the bitmap object takes a string that represents its path and it loads whatever that file is. You can change the image as many times as you want, but unless the path changes, the caching will automatically show the old image. It's just one of those things, so we use a GUID to overcome it. So the GUID shows the updated image. So it goes like this. First things first, these are file options for creating a file, the collision options, and I say replace it if it exists. The odds of a file already existing with the same GUID name,
Between slim and none.
It's edge cases I want to take care of, right? Anyway, so here I go to local folder. This is where I'm going to put it. Local folder dot create file async. Now I have a placeholder file. It's right here. A placeholder file where I'm going to inject the resulting picture, right? So here's the source. And I say source dot capture photo storage. To storage file async, right? This was the method we talked about in the slide. We pass in the format, which the format just says it's created as a PNG. And we also pass in the file. That's the destination file that it's going to be injected into. Now, I know that it's done. So the last thing I say is this.image. That's going to be the image control that shows the result of the capture equals new bitmap image and load it from that path. So now it renders it properly, passes it to the image as the type that it expects, and from that point forward just shows you what you just took. It really is that simple, mm-hmm. right? Not that big of a deal. And it's when I click take, but it's when I start the preview that it asks for permission to do it. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then from there, it's just a matter of your implementation. I could show you what we do with it from there, but there's no real reason to. We take it, save it off, and then show it in that user control. But this is how we capture the actual picture. If it was a video I wanted, I would change it to the capture a video to storage file async. It would do that for me. I would have to implement a stop button if I did that. But that's it.
It's pretty cool.
It's pretty clean, and and there it is. All the other sensors that you might interact with are definitely cool. This is the one that's most likely to be there. It's certainly one of the coolest ones to grab.
Absolutely.
So something else we could show, and I think is worthwhile, is this application. In fact, let me go ahead and run our app. Is it running by chance? It is not. So let me run our app here. And so when I'm in the hub, I see all of the courses that I can take. I'm going to start search here. Hang on. I want to start in the hub. There we go. When I am in the hub here, see, I have all these options that I could go to. And I just happen to know, for example, this one here, this section is one, is two. Anyway, I go to this one, right? And so here we are. And I could say 2.2. Look at that. I got the wrong picture. That's hilarious. I'm going to back out. I don't want to, are you kidding me? Let's go to the good one. anyway, so this is 1.1. So we talked about secondary tiles and the ability to use a secondary tile to directly go into this record. But there's other things you can do as well. Other ways to activate your application. We can use file activation. Darren, you're right. There is a file activation method override in AppXAML. And you can use file activation, which basically is saying .pdf launches the Adobe Reader, .something-something could launch our application as well. Yep. And that's especially valuable if your application interacts with data that's saved in a file.
Yeah, if it's doing something with documents or images, you know, you can add yourself as another viewer of images, should you so wish, and so on.
Yeah, if it's not, then it's a weird way of activating your app. But it's there nonetheless.
Yeah.
Another way, which is probably a little more universally valuable, is protocol activation. Of course, protocol activation is the—it's like HTTP colon is a protocol that tells me to launch the browser. Mail 2 colon tells me to launch my mail client. And something, you know, XYZ colon tells me to launch your application. So we'll do that. I want to launch my application with protocol activation. So let's start by just demoing it, right? So the way we'll do that is, let's see. What's our protocol? Do you recall?
It's jumpstart.
Just jumpstart?
Colon.
Question mark. Module equals.
Module ID 1.
Equals. 1.1. Oh, I took the ID out.
You took?
I did indeed.
That's what you get for screen.
All right. So this is, you can see that our protocol is jumpstart colon. And then we have the module that we're going to be reading here, right? Or the this is a key name or a name value pair. And module is the name, and then the value is 1.1. Then the logic inside our application is going to listen for this. It's going to be invoked by it. It's going to parse out 1.1. It's going to go directly to that record, right? So similar to this. You know, we need to copy that don't run the startup logic, the splash screen logic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, I mean, we still need to initialize the application and load the data in if it's not been running. But if the application's already running, yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Absolutely. This is what happens when you change my stuff.
What did I change? All right, we're going to try this one more time. Grr. Why did we? There, look, it worked.
Perfect.
I blame the SkyDrive stuff.
Uh-huh. So did you mention the WW form URL decoder?
I didn't, not yet. We haven't looked at the code. I just wanted to show that we could launch it this way. A couple interesting things. This means you can launch your application from a web page as well, right? You can call a web page that causes it to launch. If I said jumpstart colon and there was no application running on my machine that implemented that protocol, it would ask me if I wanted to go to the store to find one that did. That's awesome. So I can tell somebody to use this protocol or somehow push this protocol to them, and they don't even have my application installed, but because they're using the protocol, it takes them to the store. The store automatically filters to find all the ones that use Jumpstart. It's very neat. It's very, very neat. Now, let's look at how we actually do the implementation. All right, so let me, I'm going to stop the debugger here. There we are. And go to AppXAML, because this is where the logic is. And on activated, remember, there's two ways for your application to start, on launch and on activated. Activated occurs after it has launched. If it's already launched, activated still runs again, right? And then inside the splash is where the logic is. And it basically uses the WWForm URL decoder. This is what Darren was just referring to, where I can pass in whatever the query was, and it will separate that name value pair so I can access it real easily. Right? That's the idea. And so this is what I do. First thing I do is I take the decoder and I put it into the ID. So this is me getting whatever the module is. If that's empty, then I look to see if it's an episode. That's because this app, when all of the data is unlocked, it shows both modules for courses and episodes for shows, for different shows. And then, as long as it's not null, right, this is handling if you pass in something that's empty, then it sets up that I need to go to the details page. And from that point forward, it just follows the same logic as the splash screen and rolls from there. Now, what we were missing was if it's activated, and I'll actually show you. Oh, that's right. Oh, here we go. Is here we skip and we go directly to details, and we don't do that for activated. That's why it went to splash too, mm-hmm. right? It's just yes. a missing if statement that we'll toss in there. But nonetheless, this gives you the ability to pass anything in to this URI. A URI is a long string. Granted, it's just a URI, but at the same time, you can encode it. And from that point forward, use any piece of text that you want, including a JSON object, if that makes sense to you as well, so that you can have not just module equals 123, but you can have module equals this and this and this. I mean, just think of a query string in a website and what you can do with that, or you can make it look like it's a RESTful or however it is you want it to be. You can make that URL syntax the way you want to. There's guidance, but at the same time, there's freedom for you to do whatever makes sense for your application. So you can activate by a file, you can activate by a tile, and you can also activate through a protocol activation, a custom protocol activation. Now, another thing you'll notice when the application is running is, let me back to home here, is, and we talked about this when we were talking about orientation, and that is that we have this advertisement right here.
Could you just quickly show people in the settings how to bring up and hide the Microsoft Live account for the badge? A lot of people are trying to follow along and they can't see the badge control because we haven't got the settings.
Oh, yeah. So the default for the live ID is off. So if you are in our settings, right, this is our settings, then you have to enable, right there, the Microsoft account. Once it's enabled, then when you start the application, it tries to log you in. Yeah, it's very nice. Very nice. So be sure and do that, no doubt. All right. Another piece is right here. So we're showing all of the courses for modules for our last course. And so here's the first one, of course, and then the second one here, the third one, the fourth at the top, and then all the way down. And right here in the middle of all the data is this little Star Trek logo that would represent perhaps an advertisement that you would show in your app. And you could show the advertisement, you could have an in-house advertisement. Mm-hmm. So that would be something advertising in about your company, about another app that you have or something like that.
Yeah, or you something that's aligned with your brand and so on.
Yeah, something you control.
Yep.
And so you're not getting paid for that. But you're just taking advantage of the exposure.
Wouldn't that be neat?
Getting paid for it?
Yeah. Click on my blog.
Yeah, that'd be sweet. I'd hate to be the one paying.
Exactly.
And but nonetheless, so this is just a placeholder. I click on it right here, right? It just says advertisement, yay. But if I click on this, it takes me to the item, right? All right, so how do we do that? How do we inject an advertisement into our existing data? Without a doubt, this sort of data interstitial approach is the least intrusive, right? Mm-hmm. You don't have a banner somewhere looking terrible. You don't have something that pops up and takes the full screen or anything like that. You don't slow the user's experience down. You just incorporate an advertisement right there with it. And probably more importantly, it gives you the option to use in-app purchases. So watch this. I'll swipe up from the bottom to reveal the command bar, and I've got Upgrade here. So Upgrade uses the in-app purchases API to go out and get the license for this application, find the in-app purchases available for this application, determine if it's purchased or not, and if it's not, allow them to, right? So,
and we encourage everybody to download this, run this application, and click on this, and give us, you know, $100 each time you click.
Right. And that's not the way it works. So don't worry.
Unfortunately.
But I'm in the debugger, or I'm not in the debugger, but I'm set to simulate this right now, right? This isn't even in the store. In fact, you can only simulate when you're not in the store. So there's no direct interaction with in-app purchases until it's in the store and published. So right here and any other time that I haven't installed it, I'm going to be simulating. So when I tap on upgrade, right, I get this little dialogue that is not the official dialogue by any means, right? It's a goofy one that shows all the possible return codes so that you can handle those, right? And then I'll say continue on OK. That's basically the user has just pushed purchase. The time passed, whatever it is, for them to be able to do the purchase. They can fulfill it through their through the credit card that's associated. They can fulfill it through, anyway, so all these different ways, right? And so I'm going to say OK, or in this case, continue. And so now I have made the purchase. The application received the result and removed all the advertising from the app. Pretty cool. I mean, that's pretty neat.
Yep.
And easily the simplest way to do it. That in-app purchase is handled through the in-app purchase helper. It's on my blog. You can go get it. And it basically turns an in-app purchase into a 2 or 3 line thing, and it's pretty easy.
And it's fair to say that really this is the best way to consider monetizing your application now.
Oh, it absolutely is. Do not sell your app.
Yeah. Do not turn around and put a 99-cent charge on it. People are not clicking on apps and not purchasing apps that have that buy.
Yeah.
It's this in-app purchase now is the way that people are expecting to really engage with your application.
You're probably thinking in your mind, oh, yeah, but this type of app, you know, you could sell. You're probably right. There is going to be one or two out there that, you know, you make the Disneyland app, and you know families only go there once every couple years, and so you sell it to them because you know you won't get ad revenue. Fine.
Yeah.
But 99% of the case, it's going to be these users are intolerant of a price on an app. It is absolutely amazing. Even I would even say the Disneyland app. That's not true either.
Exactly. I mean, if you think how the trends have gone, you know, we had the Apple Store that really has no try capability, that your applications are fundamentally, they're either free or you're going to pay something. There is no try to use. So the Microsoft Store introduced the whole try capability.
Yeah.
So you could actually download an application and it was up to you as the developer to control whether there was, you know, a full experience that you time capped or whatever. And then the buy capability beyond that. But I think now the marketplace has evolved such that people are just expecting to download something for free. It's going to be useful.
Yeah. And then if you have additional features, you can use like this in-app feature, in-app purchases to unlock them.
Yes.
But I mean, users, it's just a mentality. It's not.
They want everything for free.
Yeah, I do. I know that's right.
Absolutely.
All right. So this is the in-app purchase as well as advertising. I want to show just for a second. Let me explain it actually. So when I'm binding to this list, this list is a list of modules, right? And so I have all these modules and they are repeating inside this list and the grid view shows them for me. However, at the same time, I need to take that down a level and say I don't want to bind just to courses or just to modules, but I also want to bind to episodes. And so when you look at our data model, you'll see there's two types of records, both episodes and modules. And that's because we have courses to learn from that we're doing right here at Jumpstart, and also the dev radio shows and things like that, and they're ever so slightly different. And so to show them both, I make the collection a collection of bases, right? Mm-hmm. So that I can put both of them. Now let's introduce a third one. So I have both a show as well as a module as well as an advertisement. They all inherit from the same base, so they all fit nicely into that collection and they all bind nicely here as well. A grid view, and we talked about this in a previous section, one day back.
In the past.
Yeah, where you can use a data template selector inside a grid. So that based on whatever record you have, you can swap out and use a different data template. So the first data template might show, you can see that it has the title at the bottom and the image behind it. That's fantastic. But the advertising, let's say, doesn't have any of that. All it shows is the advertisement in a totally unique data template. So if I were to show you here in Visual Studio, I'll show you right here. I have a, let's see, in our controls, oh, here we are, is the template selector. And so the template selector has just a simple method of select it template core. And it allows me to say, if it is an advertisement that's in there, remember, I can mix these records now because the collection is actually a collection of bases that they all will inherit from. Sort of like a collection of objects, but it's a little bit more typed than that. So if it's an advertisement record, then I return the advertisement template. Otherwise, just return the normal template. So now I'm able to swap between them in the same grid, in the same list, so they look differently each. To show you how that's implemented, I'll show you in the App Hub. All right. Here's my grid view. The grid view has an item template selector. That's what we just talked about. That's that custom class. It has two properties. The first property is going to be the normal template. Let me jump back to it to show you. Here's the normal template. And then here's the advertised two properties that I created. So the first one is the normal template, right? That's where I pass in that child template. It reads from the local resources or the global resources to find it and then passes that in. And then right here, the advertisement template, and I pass that in as well. And it's where it's some scope, and I can go get that template. In this case, I know that the ad template is in AppXAML. And now it has those to choose from. I could create another one if I needed to and switch between yet another template, no big deal. And it allows me to swap them around and make a different UI experience for it. Now, let me go into AppXAML and show you. So here I have, here's my data template. Its background is black and it has an image inside it that goes directly to an advertisement. Now here's what's special is I wouldn't want to show an in-house ad probably. I mean, I wouldn't mind showing an in-house ad, but what I'd really want to show is one I can get revenue from in order to, but there is this idea of fill rate, and this is where an advertisement that I'm showing doesn't have an advertisement to display, right? For one reason or another, perhaps I'm not connected to the internet, perhaps the service on the back end can't find an advertisement at that moment to show for the dimensions that I'm asking, whatever it is, right? Then an error is raised, an intentional error is raised, and I use that error to hide the advertisement and show my in-house ad, right? On CodePlex, there's the ad rotator, fantastic little tool that allows you to have advertisements from many different providers. And as one fails, it tries another. As one fails, it tries another. As one fails, it tries another. And then eventually results in your in-house ad showing if they all fail down the line, right? That's really cool and gives you the best possible aggregated fill rate. Because again, if you're doing this to monetize, you're trying to make money on it. And so the best strategy you can have is something like the ad rotator that goes in and says, all right, I have five places to pick from, or maybe two places, or whatever it is, more than one place to pick from. If one fails, I'll go to the other. If that fails, I'll go to the house ad, right? So you always have an advertisement one way or another, and you get paid more often than not, right? That's really nice. So I want to show PubCenter for a second. PubCenter is Microsoft Advertising. This, if you're a developer, a PubCenter account is how you would create the advertising unit to display in the first place. So here I am.
I'm gonna zoom in a little bit so they can read that a bit better.
So here I am, like so. I wanna show that I have a list of applications. In this case, I've only got a single application, just my sample Windows 8 app. And inside that, I'll have ad units. So there's two ideas here. The first one is the app. The next one is the ad unit. The app is a container of ad units. The app represents whatever your app application is. And the reason you would have separate ad units is because, one, you might want different sizes, so because you're going to show them in different locations in your app. And two, you might want specific telemetry on your ad units. So you put an ad here and you put an ad here. I wonder which one is doing better. We'll just create two. It's no big deal. Separates all of the instrumentation and all the interesting data so you can kind of make some analysis from it. So if I go into my app here, I'll just select it. I can see that my app has a unique ID. So this is important because I'm going to ask for an ad here in a second. So I'll click on Add Units up here at the top. And when I do, I'll just show you what I've selected here. I'll click on Add Units, and I'll select the tab that says Windows 8 Application. It shows I only have one ad unit. So remember, two things. The first one is the application. That's my Windows 8 sample, right? And the second one is my ad unit. That's the actual advertisement. And this is the sample ad unit, 250 by 250. If I was going to go into that, you can see it has two values. The first value it has here is the ID of the application, right? The first one here. And then the second one is the value of the ad unit. I need both of those to make it work. And so let me show you how I would do that. I'll go back to my image. Here's my image, right? And right here, instead of showing an image, what I really want to show is an ad. So I'll go to the toolbox. I've already installed the Microsoft Advertising SDK, which is what makes this present, makes the ad control present. I'll drag it over here so I can use it. Right? I'll drag it in. And so when I do that, up here in references, the Microsoft Advertising XAML, MS Advertising XAML is referenced for me already. And then if I go back to my XAML, you can see the ad unit was added right here. Well, I'm not done. I'm absolutely not done. I need to make sure that I know its width. Remember, it was 250 by 250. So I'll take its height, and I'll make it 250. And also take its width, and I'll make it 250. And then those two values are very important. So I want that first value. Remember the first value of application ID? I'll put that here, and application ID, and I need that one last value, and that is going to be the unit ID. And now I'm done. From this point forward, the ad control does the rest for me. It shows the advertisement that I want to show here. It goes in and says, hey, this is my application, this is my ad unit, give me back whatever it is I'm supposed to have. And so from that point forward, it's the service that serves me the correct size. It also serves me a unique experience. Sometimes clicking on an advertisement will cause it to navigate to a browser location. Sometimes clicking on an advertisement will give me an in-app experience, like a full screen thing pops up where I can browse through car choices, and it's really neat. And it just depends on the ad that you happen to get. When I created this ad unit, I told it the category of application that I had. I said that, you know, this is, I think entertainment is what I said for this one.
So it's at least somewhat aligned.
So it's just somewhat aligned. That's exactly right. And if this were to fail, then it has this error occurred event. That's the error that I can handle. I handle the error occurred event, and I would basically just hide this advertisement. Now, there's a couple things to know about the ad control. The first thing is, it refreshes automatically about every 30 seconds, and so you get updated ads as they're visible. As soon as 60% of the ad is visible, then you get credit for it. If the user clicks it, doesn't give you extra credit, right? It's all about visible impressions. And so the more the merrier. And anyway, so you get that certain percentage showing as well, right? And again, remember, it's you versus the uninstall button. So it's not about stacking advertisements so you have so many that the user, you know, you get so many more credits. That's a beckon to the uninstall button. Instead, you kind of blend it in like we did with that Star Trek advertisement. Another thing to know is advertisements they win in a Z-index war. That means you can never put anything over an advertisement, ever. You can never put anything over an advertisement. Mm-hmm. This is a big deal for a lot of things. Your settings dialog, if it covers an advertisement, the advertisement is on top of your settings dialog. In semantic zoom, if an advertisement is visible, you need to hide it. Right?
Yes.
It's a big deal.
And you also may see some artifacts sometimes when you scroll really quickly. Because it's above in another layer, sometimes there's a little bit of lag between that moving and
that's
everything
right.
else.
I said you had to hide them. I didn't mean to say that. What you actually do is you suspend them. Mm-hmm. There's a method on the ad control that says suspend, and it basically turns it off, right? And basically allows you to win in a Z war. However, it will no longer refresh. You don't get credit for it anymore. You certainly want to resume when the time comes back. That can be kind of a trick when you are in a grid view, because you know, you never know where those advertisements necessarily are. You've kind of injected them into your data, so you want to kind of sniff them out, either have them register themselves when they load so that you can have a list of all your on-page advertising. Honestly, that's the way I do it. Mm-hmm. Or you can go through all the events that were or all the items that were generated by the grid view as well. Now, that's an easy way to do it. If I were to run this, I have no idea if this would work or not.
Yeah,
let's take a look. This is kind of exciting.
Taking a walk on the wild side.
Yeah,
doesn't
exactly
look like it is.
Specified value cannot be assigned to a collection. What is this from?
So yeah, every time you take a walk on the wild side.
This is ridiculous. Why'd you tell me to say yes to that?
Uh-huh.
Oh, look at that. There's a backslash at the end of the line. That's all. It's just a backslash at the end of the line. Turns out you can't have stray backslashes.
Apparently not.
Now, again, we were just simulating the purchase, so it's going to go back to its default state of having an advertisement. And it's also 250 by 250. I'm not even sure if that'll fit. We were just kind of goofing around here. But, oh, look at that. There I got an advertisement. Cool. Microsoft Advertising is what it said.
Exactly. Up it appeared.
Yeah, so that was successful. You can see it doesn't quite fit, so I'd want to make sure it adjusts a little bit. Just by coincidence, it's all black, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's not the way it usually happens.
Yeah.
And what happens when I click on this one? Oh, browser. I just was curious.
There you go.
And, but anyway, there it is, right? Yeah. I got my first impression for this app right there.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have it wherever you want. You could have an advertisement in each group if that's what you wanted. You could have an advertisement just here at the beginning. But this interstitial inside the data, this data interstitial, is better than a banner. It's just better than a banner, mm-hmm. because banners tends to push and kind of mess up your UI.
Yeah,
and
it's
design.
More jarring. I mean, this is a more integrated experience.
That's right. And honestly, it's not in the way, right? You can still, you can move around it all that you want.
Yeah. Now, if every other tile was an ad, that's starting to get in the way of the experience.
Yeah. In fact, I don't have the logic to hide it. Let's see if I can, there, perfect. Look at that semantic zoom. I don't know if you saw what happened. But like, it still shows it, right? I need to register for
the semantic
zoom.
Put it over the other side and bring up the settings so you can see.
Oh yeah, so here, yeah, exactly. Well, we'll just mess this freaking thing up. Watch this. All right, so I'll pull up settings. Wait, how could I get it to the side? Oh, I'll have to do it.
Yeah, before. Do it in the full.
There, I'll put it right here. Right, I need a little bit more. I need just a little more data. Dang it! All right, well, it'll still work. And so. There you go, and settings, and look.
There it is.
Oh my gosh, it's
how
terrible.
Annoying.
That's the reason it has suspend. That's the reason it has resume. Again, I cover all of this. I have a blog article that covers all the details of it.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's PubCenter. All of the controls are right there native, as well as going to CodePlex and using the ad rotator if you want to, so you can leverage other providers as well, just in case PubCenter doesn't fill your image, fill your advertising.
So, I mean, you could encapsulate that control inside your own user control. And you could use like a messaging framework such as MVVM Lite to pump a message out saying, hey, I'm showing settings. And then every instance of that user control could subscribe to that message and automatically suspend. And then when you release it, you just send out a message that says done, and everything could resume.
It's a great point. Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's probably the easiest way to do it, to be mm-hmm. honest. But it's important that's an important caveat around it.
Yeah.
Is this idea of it can't lose an index war, a z-index. Perfect. So we were talking about camera capture.
Yeah.
We were talking about protocol activation as a way of using your application or interacting with your application and activating it from just the run dialog or from a web page or something like that. Lots of power, really easy to implement, really mm-hmm. easy. Another declaration you have to put in your app manifest. And then finally, advertising that you can inject inside your data. Pretty cool.
Absolutely.
Nothing complicated here.
Absolutely.
All right, let's take a 10-minute break.
After which,
we will come back to implementation of the Microsoft account, logging in.
And SkyDrive.
And SkyDrive.
Because I know you've been waiting for bated breath with SkyDrive.
SkyDrive, that's right.
Catch you later.
See you in 10 minutes.